Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Thursday, November 16th, 2023. I hate to see years go, but I'm happy to see year 2023 go into 2024. I just am getting tired of saying 2023. Anyway, Dave, hi.
Six more weeks.
I know.
Of the dismal year. Hi, Melody. Happy fast food day.
Oh,
I know. And if you, like me, like to avoid that yucky stuff, well, there's always International Check Your Windshield Wiper Blades Day. You can believe that. There's also Taiwan On for Safety Day. I think that's a Mothers Against Drunk Driving thing. There's National Button Day. I didn't even see what that was about. National Rural Health Day and National State of Indiana Day. But me, I'm tuning into National Pancreatic Cancer Day in memory of my good friend Mark Gruen, plus the annual Great American Smokeout. In memory of my mom and her parents, and International Day of Tolerance in honor of my young grandsons.
Tolerance?
Mm. There's something to celebrate for almost everyone today.
And also Bob Chapman. I think most of the listeners know Bob Chapman. He passed away with pancreatic cancer, too.
Oh, boy.
So, yeah. Back in 2013, so 10 years. It's hard to believe, really hard to believe 10 years have gone by since then. But anyway, let's go ahead and get on a cheerier note here. We've got gold up $21 at $1,982, off the high of $6. So we had a great day in gold. Silver was up 30 cents at $23.83. So the high was $24.17. Platinum, pretty much even, $9.05. Palladium was up $9 at $1,067. USDX, let's see, 104.44. And I think what probably made gold go down a little bit is crude oil just took a beating today. Right now it's down 3.78 at 72.88 for crude oil. Well, that's always good heading into the holiday season. People have a few extra bucks, so they won't be putting it into their gas their gas tank, so maybe they'll spend those few extra bucks at your local Walmart or whatever. So who knows? But let's see, what else do we have here? Paper markets today. The Dow was lower by 45 points, S&P 5 points to the upside, NASDAQ up 9 points. So nothing too exciting there. Europe is pretty much negative across the board except Germany. They were up 38 points. Asia was all negative, not by much. I mean, the Hang Seng was, 1.3%. But other than that, nothing there. And let's see, my 10-year yield, 4.44. And my natural gas down 4% at 3.054 for natural gas. And so a very strange day for oil pricing, and a lot of different reasons for it. And but first, before we get to the oil and tell you what those reasons are, we had a home builder sentiment report today in the housing industry. And let's see, the home builder sentiment fell 6 points to 34 in November on the National Association of Home Builders Housing Index. Now, anything below 50 is considered negative. But in this new world that we live in, the housing industry is the only sector that is in a recession. Nothing else is, just the industry. Everything else is just flowing along, just without issues. So 34 versus 50, that's huge. That's huge. Analysts had expected the number to just be the same from October, unchanged. On the rise in interest rates since the end of August, of course, has had an impact on builder views of market conditions. Large number of prospective buyers were, as we've seen, priced out of the market. So although those 30-year rates have come down, but they're still at, 7.5 almost. At least they're not over 8 like they were temporarily, Dave.
Yeah. Yeah, Bob Dietz, who's the home builder's chief economist, notes that while the builder sentiment is down so far this month, recent data point to improving conditions for home construction in the coming months. In particular, he points to the 10-year Treasury rate moving back under 4.5% for the first time since late September, which he says will help bring mortgage rates down below 7.5%. And he also said, given the lack of existing inventory, housing inventory, he thinks the lower mortgage rates will price in this, housing demand and likely set the stage for improved builder views in December. So we will see. I mean, over a third, 36% of builders said they cut prices in November, up from 32% the previous 2 months. The 39 is the highest share in this cycle, tying the previous high 2 years ago. The average price cut was said to be about 6%. Now, the home builders are estimating a 5% increase in single-family starts next year as they see financial conditions easing. It's one of those cases that we'll just have to wait and see. All the index's components are way below 50. Buyer traffic in particular fell to 21. Sales expectations are at 39, current sales at 40, just a tad higher. I mean, all pretty woeful signs for an industry that has been struggling for many moons right now.
I mentioned earlier when we first started about crude oil prices, They were down over 4.33% just by lunchtime today as inventories rose and industrial production fell. The West Texas Intermediate December contract fell to 73.36 a barrel this morning. We saw the Brent January contract tumble just shy of 4%. And we saw U.S. crude inventories rise by 3.6 million barrels last week. Production did hold steady. So an oil expert, Phil Flynn, with the Price Futures Group, said slower industrial production combined with increased supply are playing into the slowing demand theory. He said that prices are now having a hard time finding support because bears are controlling the market. Yeah, I think bears always control the market on the downside, don't they, Dave?
Yeah, I guess unless they
short,
have
yeah.
at the end that kind of that ability. China, though, was, their crude refining slowed to almost 3% last month. Still the equivalent of 15 million barrels a day from a record high in September. That's according to National Bureau of Statistics, suggesting continuing slowing demand in the world's second largest economy. Earlier in the week, OPEC Plus blamed speculators for the recent drop in prices, dismissing the negative sentiment as exaggerated. OPEC said China's crude imports, though, remain healthy, rising by over 11 million barrels a day this month. Now, the IMF, International Monetary Fund, expects China's economy to still grow by 5.4% this year. Although experts are saying hedge funds are real heavily short right now on oil futures, which are driving the market lower. He said the market right now is more of a money game than it is a fundamentals game. Well, we'll see in some respects when OPEC meets next on November 26th.
And so slowing demand doesn't have anything to do with the economy, right?
No. Incidental.
Okay. Yeah, it's all these other reasons, you know. Okay. Well, you know, but when we talk about how many of the cargo company that is laying off and you got cargo ships unable to come to the States, you know, through the Panama Canal. I mean, they're coming, but, you know, they're still being held up. It would lower demand. But they don't go into any of those reasons that might have a, you know, some impact on the demand. And, you know, it's just...
How they manage the canal for commercial cruise liners? Do they? I mean, I got to believe that there are all sorts of oil tankers and other other big liners, you know, backed up various points along the canal. I wonder what happens when. You know, Norwegian or Carnival and then the others.
I don't know. I thought about that because we did the cruise through the Panama Canal. It is fascinating. It truly is fascinating. And you can see why they're having that low water. That's what I find odd. But and they pay millions of dollars to go through there. The fees are very high to go through there. But I was also reading, though, too, because I mean, how do you get low water? I mean, Panama Canal's been there forever, and supposedly the water is rising, not going down. But we also know, even though the U.S. still does control a lot of that area, but so does China. And I also was reading an article not the other day, and I wanted to follow up on it, that China was actually putting pressures on a lot of the ports that they control, so many of them. And have such a big impact on so many of the ports around the world. And I was thinking, well, maybe there's a little bit more going on down at the Panama Canal than just low water. I don't know. Just a thought.
Are you suggesting there's water diversionary tactics going on, perhaps?
No, they could just be slowing. I don't know. But yeah. No, I don't think that. But I mean, if they control the ports, they can control what goes through them to some degree. I don't know.
Absolutely.
So it's and they have huge. I mean, huge. Area, because when we were going through, they were pointing out all the Chinese, you know, all the China-owned cargo lifts, and it's huge.
Wow.
I mean, it's huge. So it's just a thought, you know, because, you know, sometimes you have to think those thoughts to get to the truth, but it's just an observation, perhaps, but we'll keep following that story about the Panama Canal. Today's jobless claims, more people filed. Applications for unemployment benefits rose by 13,000 to 231,000 for the week, ending the 11th. Now, that's the most in 3 months. And again, the applications are seen as jobless claim applications are seen as representative of the number of layoffs in any given week. And if the Fed was trying to tap the brakes on the economy and the labor market for 2 years, maybe. Does it take 2 years, Dave?
Could.
Yeah. Well, you know, if they would have.
Transitory inflation has been pretty doggone sticky.
If he would have raised the rates like someone that had a little bit of control and wasn't scared of what would happen to the markets, you know, maybe they would have had the impact a little bit sooner than later. But
too low for too long. I mean,
I know.
Clearly the Great Recession scared a lot of Washington decision makers.
So I think about 1.87 million people were collecting unemployment benefits ending the week of the 4th of November, and about 32,000 more than the previous week. So, and that was the most in almost 2 years. So, Dave?
Yeah, Rubila Faruqi, who's chief U.S. economist for High Frequency Economics, noted that job growth remains strong, in his words, with businesses have yet to start reducing their workforces in a significant way, aside from these big tech companies we've been talking about over the last year. But more importantly, I think, he says, the continuing claims data are pointing to some softening in labor demand, and that's particularly what the Fed. Economists suggest that the continuing claims are beginning to rise consistently now, or more consistently anyway, because many of those who are already employed may now be having a harder time finding a new job. Quite possible, particularly for those over 50.
Well, you know, the Basel III proposals are getting a little bit of a pushback. You know, this fight over capital standards for the biggest banks, it's got a little bit more intense, as we've talked about over the past couple of days. And you have the feds and other regulators are trying to tighten the screws on the largest banks, requiring that they hold more capital, hoping to create a more stable financial system. I thought we already had a good, stable financial system. That's what they keep telling us. it suggests a more fluid political backdrop as bank regulators look to finalize the so-called Basel III endgame. I love that word, endgame suit of rules.
Republicans. I hope that's not a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Well, you know, in our view, it is. Yeah. Republicans and the banking industry have almost unanimously had their opposition to the proposals all along, but now they have important allies to whom the Biden appointees voting on the rules will, you know, likely pay more heed, maybe.
Yeah.
But,
interesting, a couple of key Democrats, some of whom are up for re-election next year, are raising questions about the regs. I think at least posturing for the little guy in their states. We'll see how it turns out. I have a feeling they'll be compromised to some extent, despite fears among some of the Fed about their independence.
Okay. And we have to go to break. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home. And if you ask me how I'm feeling, don't tell me you're too blind to see. Never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down, never gonna run around and desert you, never gonna make you cry, never gonna say goodbye, never gonna tell a lie and hurt you, never gonna give you up.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. Give us a call at Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. We got some great prices on Silver Eagles. We got a few backdated Silver Eagles that we have available. There is a steal at $27.50 for some backdated Silver Eagles. Now, people say, well, are they the same as a silver? Yes, they're a Silver Eagle. They're just not 2023s. And they're nice, bright white, maybe some toning on the edges, but very little. And but certainly worth the price at $27.50. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And Dave, I do believe you have a Levity is Golden, but I don't know. I'm not a fan of happiness in the workplace. We go to work. Work is work.
Hey, work is work.
Are we supposed to be whistle while you work, not happy while you work?
Yeah, but whistle's a sign of happiness.
Okay, if you're the dwarfs.
Yeah, well, there you go. I guess it all depends upon your lot in life. Well, with a slow but steady return to offices after a couple of years of working mostly from home, Worker happiness and engagement are falling across several industries in the U.S. Employee satisfaction has been steadily dropping over the last 3 years, according to a new study from Bamboo HR. It's a human resources software company. Globally, 6 in 10 workers say they're actively disengaged, according to Gallup. But there's a bright spot. Scores around happiness at work remain relatively high among small business employees. In fact, 11 points higher on the employee happiness index compared with the average among all companies. In fact, the smaller the company, the happier its workers are. That spells good news for my wife, who works in a company of 5. And the same for us discount gold and silver trading workers. How about it, Melody?
Absolutely.
Well, look, in the third quarter this year, those at companies with fewer than 25 employees reported happiness scores that on average were around 50% higher than workers at firms with 151 to 300 employees. We now know that small business creation boomed during the pandemic, and many small business owners around the country are even somewhat optimistic about their company's futures. Although, as I'll talk about in today's third segment, they're concerned enough that they're starting to cut back on software and other expenses they consider nice, but something they can survive without. Turns out there are 3 factors that are driving employee happiness numbers up at these small companies. First, transparency, which breeds trust and happiness, especially in remote or hybrid workplaces, and especially when bosses need to deliver hard news like layoffs. Plus, it's just naturally easier to communicate at a smaller firm. Second, friendship. Friendships at work matter to many people. 93% of new hires, especially younger ones at companies of all sizes, say they want to shadow a colleague, and 87% say they hope to make a friend at their workplace. Forging those kinds of bonds can also be easier in a small place. And third, engagement with the company's mission also drives worker satisfaction. Those who work for smaller companies like startups or close-knit family-run operations are likely to feel a stronger connection to that company mission. A couple of interesting findings, Melody, as we evolve away from that drastic, dreaded pandemic and into what perhaps is a new normal. And that is this week's Levity is Golden.
Okay, thanks, Dave. Are you happy?
I'm happy.
The only part of that concerned me was where they want to shadow a colleague. That sounds a little bit like
Well, I think
I'm just kidding. I know.
It's a little creepy, huh?
A little creepy, yes. Okay.
Yes, we've had reports of growing stalking outside of the new workplace.
Yeah. But they're happy.
They're happy. A happy stalker is a productive worker.
Well, you know, some economists out there are saying that October's retail sales show consumer spending might be landing in the sweet spot that could allow America to achieve, you know, the all elusive soft landing that you keep hearing everybody talking about. Yeah. I guess we have to get a definition of soft landing, you know. That could be very hard for some. But anyway, consumers slowed spending last month. We talked about that. But supposedly by less than analysts expected. But, you know, again, you've got 2 reports out there. You got the CNBC that said the retail sales fell by 0.08, where government numbers said 0.01.
Yeah.
So big difference. So, and the CNBC one is using actual credit card receipts and debit receipts. So I have to think they're a little bit more spot on than government, but, and they're not revising theirs either. But again, this still, even those numbers still say that the consumer might still be a little strong, but maybe they're just backing off a little bit. And of course, we have Christmas coming, so maybe they're saving up to go Christmas shopping too. So, but they're still saying that 1 month of flat retail sales isn't a red flag, especially after the months that we've seen. They're still expecting sales to grow, but it will be interesting to see what the holiday spending turns out to be.
Yeah, boy, January, the report we see in January is going to be very interesting, particularly since it's going to come right before the New Hampshire primary presidential election. Yes. In any event, you know, it's we talk about this kind of topic a lot, but it's important because, I mean, consumer spending makes up 70% of GDP, and GDP growth is a big factor.
It is.
And how the Fed makes its interest rate decisions. So if you think we're talking about it too much, it's only because we think it's an important topic that we need to drill down on every now and then. So we'll see what happens. I mean, as we're heading into the holiday season, just a whole bunch of factors that could pressure consumer spending. As of now, they say the consumer appears to be hanging on, if barely.
You know, and again, these reports, you know, how many times do we read about the consumer out there doesn't have $1,000 for any emergency or $400 for the emergency room or this, or, you know, and it's always under $1,000. I've seen it from $400 to $800 to $1,000, depending on when and who reports on it. So, but we also know we've seen credit card debt skyrocket for the consumer. So it's not that they have disposable income, that they're out there happily, you know, buying things. They're buying on their credit cards and going deeper and deeper into debt for it. And they're using their savings.
I think about the, you know, whatever age they have to get. This is an issue that could be from, you know, the 20-year-olds to the 60, 70-year-olds on fixed income is... Think about whether you forgot about it or you just put it off because you didn't have a lot of extra income. It's the fall and nights are starting to get cooler and, oh, gosh, you got to fill up your 400-gallon oil tank.
Yeah.
And you don't have that kind of savings, as you mentioned. What's happening? Your basic heat, you're putting it on a credit card. You know, it's no wonder why we're well over $1 trillion in credit card debt now.
Well, you know, we talked about Thanksgiving and next week. And, hey, guess who went home early to celebrate?
I bet you. I know my member of Congress did. How about yours?
House Republicans' decision to head home early for Thanksgiving. You know, but, you know, they did pass through. They, you know, were able to push off the government shutdown until 2024, a little at a time. And I mean, I don't even know what to say.
Another big decision right before the New Hampshire primary.
Yeah. So it's just like they can't work long enough or hard enough and do what's necessary to do what needs to be done.
This tribalism in both parties is out of hand.
It really is.
I hope the next generation can do better. No.
I'm not going to say anything. Go ahead.
Unfortunately, I think people are people. Politics is politics. And until we fundamentally change the processes.
That's right.
I think it doesn't matter how young or how old you are. Go ahead.
And why would they change anything? They got it made. So
it's like the old saying, question authority. until I'm in power.
Yeah. Yeah. That's funny. Yeah. So anyway, so they're all home cooking. They're getting ready for Thanksgiving. And I don't know if you want to add anything else to that, Dave.
Well, the good news is there are no fisticuffs today for the next couple of days, at least. I find the timing. Yes, on the one hand, these continuing resolutions give them more time to try and get a couple of more votes. If it were only just a couple of more, unfortunately, you know, there are dozens of vote shorts for any kind of long-term agreement. I mean, by long-term, I mean just to the end of fiscal year 2024, next September 30th. And just with all the factions and with all the special interest lobbies, it's just nuts. I just don't know how lack of governing going on right now. And really, there are just 20 legislative days left until the next funding deadline on January 19th. And there's another one, right, like February 9th or something like that for some of the other appropriation bills. It's not any way to do the people's business, Melody.
No, not at all. And you know what? We talked about this week where the Supreme Court came out with, you know, an ethics,
I don't know
what you want to call it.
And it's, code?
Yeah, and it's like...
guidelines?
Well, you would think that you would already have had a code. And this comes into this New York Congressman, Santos. Well, he's not going to seek re-election next year because the House Ethics, which is...
oxymoron?
Anyway, yes, thank you. The report found substantial evidence that the New York Republican committed campaign fraud and other violations. Okay, but the big question is, that's all assuming his colleagues don't decide to boot him from the chamber before them, and that doesn't seem like, you know, it seems extremely unlikely. My question is, why aren't they booting him out?
Well,
I mean, come on.
I know.
Unless they're concerned a Democrat will go in there.
That's exactly why. Because Santos is a Republican.
Right.
Republicans have such a small majority in the House. And if Santos were to resign, then the governor of his state, Kathy Hochul, who's a Democrat.
Oh, gosh. I wouldn't want her to appoint anybody
and there,
either.
Therein lies the dilemma. Yeah.
But you see, it should be just the it shouldn't be that way. It shouldn't be able to, you know, replace it. You know, if he's in there, that Republican should keep.
Well, yeah,
whoever's in there should be for the full term.
I don't care whose party.
And if you boot him out, then it stays vacant. You know,
if
you boot him out,
leaves office. Yeah, it should be another Republican that takes his place for that unexpired term.
Exactly.
And vice versa.
Yeah, it should. So then you get...
Fair is fair. Although, you know, some might argue, well, but he was blatantly lying about his credentials, blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, shame on him. Maybe also shame on us for not doing enough of research on this guy before it was time to vote. But this guy's a slime bag in my...
Well, so why didn't where was the media?
Well, you're right.
You know,
that's right.
They go after the people they want to. So, you know, where was the local media and so forth?
They were asleep. They were asleep on this. Now, largely, not completely, but largely. And the only thing I remember, you know, hearing after he was elected was that one outlet knew of his legal problems in, where was it, Brazil? Or I think he was charged with theft of some kind. I don't know if it was shoplifting or whatever. But yeah. It's the swamp is alive and well, ladies and gentlemen.
Absolutely. And just before we head into the break, well, we all know that China's Xi Jinping was here around outside of San Francisco and met with Biden overnight. And the only thing I'm going to say to that is I was watching CNBC and they were saying that the news in China was actually showing Xi Jinping shaking hands with the California governor. They weren't. Yeah.
Very interesting.
Very interesting. So that's how good this meeting was, or how. So China, you don't trust them, but we can trust we're going into a break. We'll be right back. Come on, baby. Don't say baby.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen, Melody off, taking care of other client businesses. Final segment, she's at 1-800-375-4188. Tyler Durden observed in yesterday's Zero Hedge blog that optimism is driving the financial markets. Most investors seem to believe the economy is strong. He notes the consumer is resilient, price inflation is easing, and most people think the Fed's finished hiking interest rates. Well, in his podcast, Gold Bull Peter Schiff explained why this investor optimism is at odds with reality. Stocks have been rallying, defying the fundamentals that would argue for significantly lower stock prices. Schiff called it a rather narrow rally driven by just a handful of stocks. Quote, the generals are going, he said, but the troops are not coming along with them. All of this, he added, I don't think is going to end well for the longs in the market. He noted that the Russell 2000, a broader measure of stocks, is at roughly the same level as it was in the summer of 2018, while the NASDAQ has nearly doubled in price. He said the valuations are extremely stretched. So Durden asks, what's actually driving this rally then? Schiff believes it's the perception that the Fed's finished hiking interest rates after it kept its finger on the pause button at the FOMC's November policy meeting. In fact, investors are pricing in 75 basis points of cuts in 2024. Schiff said he thinks the markets will likely price in even deeper cuts moving forward. Here's Schiff. Quote, if the Fed starts cutting rates, it's because the economy is very weak, weaker than it already is. And potentially we have a banking crisis, a financial crisis, or something breaks, which will require the Fed to be far more aggressive than 75 basis points. Now, last week, Fed Chair Jerome Powell participated in a panel discussion and said the Fed isn't even thinking about rate cuts right now. It's clear, though, Schiff says, that the markets don't buy that. In fact, he thinks it's a lie on its face. Durden asks, how could that be true, though? How could the FOMC not even be talking about rate cuts? And even if they don't want to do it, how could they not be talking about it? Why would Powell even say they aren't talking about cuts? Because, well, Durden says anyway, he really wants to make sure the markets take seriously the tough talk about inflation. Because he keeps reiterating how far inflation is from their 2% target, how much higher it is, and how much further they have to go to bring it down. So Durden believes part of that is to not even let the market think they're discussing rate cuts when, in fact, of course, they are. Powell also talked about the, quote, resilient consumer. But is a consumer really resilient? Well, Schiff said, yes, to the extent people are still spending money, but they're running up massive credit card bills to do so, over $1.6 trillion worth. And Schiff pointed out that you have to ask why they're spending. He says it's not like the consumer's resilient, like Superman is resilient to bullets. You shoot Superman and the bullets just bounce off his chest. The consumer isn't resilient like that. Consumer, in fact, is getting shot and those bullets are hurting. They're doing real damage. But the consumer is still breathing, still alive, resilient enough to not be dead. How's that so? Well, one way is having depleted their household savings. The other way, having maxed out or maxing in the process of maxing out their credit cards. These so-called resilient consumers are buying groceries and paying to gas up their overpriced cars with credit cards that are charging an average 21% interest on unpaid balances these days. And that's average. So Schiff says, I wouldn't really say that's resilient. I mean, they're surviving, if barely, but that's not resiliency. Now, the other thing Durden says is that's preventing the consumer from completely bleeding out is taking on a second or third job. We see this with the record number of multiple job holders in the Bureau of Labor Statistics data. Eventually, these lifelines will be gone, Durden says. Savings will go to zero, no more to deplete. You'll max out your credit cards and won't be able to use them to buy your family's necessities. And people can't work 24/7, can they? But Schiff reminds us that there's one thing that has no limits, price inflation. He warned prices are going to keep on rising because the budget deficits are skyrocketing and the money printing is going to continue. Thus, the inflation burden is going to be heavier and heavier, and this consumer who's already been shot up is going to get shot up some more. Schiff says the Fed hasn't done enough to stop price inflation. They haven't tightened enough to stop the borrowing, but they've tightened enough to break an economy that's been rooted in artificially low interest rates since the Great Recession. And so Durden concludes, all the economic optimism out there in La La Land is unwarranted. It's based on an illusion. At some point, reality will break through. And what happens then? Well, that's anyone's guess. In today's first segment, Melody and I talked about how the Fed's Basel III banking proposals are getting more pushback from members of both parties in Congress. Fed Vice Chair for Supervision, Michael Barr, and the other Biden-appointed bank regulators leading the charge to implement Basel III are going to face big trade-offs as they look to revise the proposed rules to reflect those incoming concerns. They probably already have the votes. I mean, the Fed's seven-person board of governors, for example, includes five Biden appointees, four if you don't count Chair Jerome Powell, who's been appointed and reappointed by Obama, Trump, and Biden. But if the rules are enacted without bipartisan consensus, they may be more vulnerable to being reversed when the next Republican president is elected and alienate Democrats like those who raise concerns in this week's hearings. The longer regulators take, the more the rulemaking process could stretch into an election year. But if they rush the process, it could also add ammo to potential banking industry litigation, arguing that proper administrative procedures were not followed. Washington policy strategist Brian Gardner wrote earlier this week, quote, litigation would slow down the process, and any delay in finalizing or implementing the proposal could increase the risk that a Republican administration, if a Republican candidate wins in 2024, would scrap the proposal altogether. Therefore, banking regulators might decide that it's in their best interest to modify the proposal in an attempt to avoid possible litigation. Their choices, he says, include watering down the rules to claim victory and potentially avoid being sued, or holding out and taking their chances that Biden is reelected. But look, there's virtually no compromise, little compromise in Washington these days. So some modification could go a long way to mollify lawmakers anyway. Not so sure about the banks and their lobbyists who may sue in any event. But a compromise, one in the face of increasing pushback, could put a staple in the Fed's desire to be seen as a wholly independent body. Talk about a plot thickening, ladies and gentlemen. Stay tuned. Nick Martin, probably never heard of him. I didn't before having seen this article. He's co-founder and CEO of Joe Coffee. He's so concerned about the state of the economy that he's looking for ways his small company can save money. One main area for cuts, software. Martin started his Seattle-based company with his younger brother to help local coffee shops better compete with Starbucks by making it easier for them to fulfill mobile orders, track analytics, and automate their marketing. Now, while their eight-year-old business has held pretty steady through the economic dip during the pandemic, Martin said he's seeing evidence that people are now buying fewer lattes than they did just a year ago. And any consumer slowdown is a potentially troubling sign for Joe Coffee's customers, and the company is proactively tightening its belt, or at least trying to. Martin said that Joe Coffee has reduced its number of subscriptions to HubSpot. That's a marketing automation software vendor. It's also closely examining its spending with payment processor Stripe to see if its agreement with the company will be worth renewing. He said, every subscription we have is now under a magnifying glass. Well, hey, look, the Martin brothers certainly aren't alone. I mean, based on the latest earnings reports from software businesses that serve small and medium businesses, known as the SMBs, these SMBs could be your local shoe store, an ice cream shop, or the neighborhood spa. In HubSpot, Bill Holdings, Paycom, and ZoomInfo, all have been warning investors of potential trouble on the horizon. Their comments reflect broader economic data, which show that consumers are feeling the ongoing effects of inflation and higher interest rates. Retail sales for October, well, according to the government, fell 0.1%, underscoring continuing pressure from higher prices. And Wall Street's on edge in any event, whatever the numbers are. While broad market indexes like the S&P 500 are up slightly since mid-year, tech companies that specialize in the SMB space are hurting. Paycom, which provides payroll and human resources software, saw its stock plunge 38% on November 1st, the day after the company said revenue growth next year would be 10 to 12%, which happened to be way below analyst expectations for above 20. 2 days later, shares of Bill plummeted 25%. That company, whose software helps clients track and control their payables and receivables, reduced its profit and revenue guidance for 2024 as well. And on the last day of October, Zoom Info shares tumbled 16% on a weaker than expected forecast for just the fourth quarter. Zoom Info helps sales and marketing teams track leads and customers. HubSpot shares dropped over 6% after its earnings report last week, though the stock has since recovered. The company's growth is slowing, and CEO Yamini Rangan described the environment as choppy and challenging, with clients continue to optimize spending. Since June 30th, the stocks of these software companies are down between 12 and 49%. The NASDAQ is up more than 2% over that same stretch. The sector of the market those companies serve is critical to the domestic economy. Over the past two decades, small businesses have accounted for 40% of GDP, according to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. They also employ 46% of the American workforce, according to the BLS. Jake Dollarhide, who's CEO of Longbow Asset Management, said results from Paycom and other SMB providers offer a window into the state of the economy. Anytime people don't feel wealthy, he said, they tend to pull back. And that's an important lesson to keep in mind. If America is really built on the backbone of small business owners, why are they the ones that never catch a break? That's Brendan Martin, Nick's younger brother, who asked that question. For Joe Coffey's business to work, its technology has to create almost immediate revenue and profit gains for its customers, which are already operating on real tight budgets and even tighter margins. The company doesn't charge a recurring subscription, but only a percent of each transaction. Nick Martin cited higher borrowing costs as the main reason that Joe Coffey has reduced the number of software products it buys now. The company has six software subscriptions, down from 12 to 15, accounting for 3 to 5% of operating expenses. That's down from around 8%, he said, from the recent past. Decisions on what to get rid of are based on whether a product is nice to have or is essential to business operations. He asked, can we get away with just doing this on a spreadsheet? Well, that's how the company decided which HubSpot services to cut. Joe Coffey's still a HubSpot subscriber, but's now paying for fewer seats and fewer tools. Investors across the sector are trying to figure out if SMB spending has bottomed out or if businesses are still looking for other opportunities to slim down their portfolio should the economic picture worsen. Brian Keene, who's an analyst at one of the too big to fail banks, said if there's another shoe to drop, there's still going to be some downside risk. And that's the bottom line. More so, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back next Tuesday. Melody will be back tomorrow with Butch to close out the week. Also, be on the lookout for our weekly What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog in the AM. Thanks always to our production engineer, Todd Waite, and to you for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Have a good night. Bye-bye.
Does Big Pharma have a hold of you? ThePerimol.com believes everything the body needs is provided by nature, unlike prescription drugs that aren't meant to cure but cover up your symptoms and contain addicting chemicals. Strauss Heart Drops are 100% all natural. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops by calling Jay at 1-877-817.